Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Talking About the Big Stuff podcast with Michael Cole and Matthew Cravat. I am Michael Cole.
And I am Matthew Cravat.
All right, so tonight's topic, Matthew, was actually your idea, right, wasn't it?
I didn't invent the idea, but I guess
it was. So why don't you introduce the topic?
So I heard a phrase the other day that I had not heard before. And actually, the person who said it got it backwards at first, then she was all upset she got it backwards, and she reversed it. And then when I looked it up, it's used the words in either order, so she wasn't wrong. And it is, we've talked about toxic masculinity before, and this topic I heard about was toxic positivity. And I thought, that's an interesting topic.
Well, so I want to talk about that for a second. You're saying that positivity is toxic?
No. I ain't saying that all positivity is toxic. Toxic is what you call an adjective, right? It modifies the word that you put it in front of, right? Like a veggie burger. A burger is made of meat, but when you call it veggie, it becomes vegetable, and a vegetarian can eat it because you called it veggie. It's the same thing. When you call it toxic positivity, it's a different kind. It's a subset of positivity.
Awesome. Okay, that explains everything for me. And now I don't have to be ignorant to that very simple fact.
There you go. That's how adjectives work.
Yeah. I have, since you said that, I like said that this is the topic you wanted to do, I'm like, okay, I'm making this joke.
I'm going to set Matthew up to make him make the joke.
Yep. That's why I had you introduce it. All right. So we should be... good on the website? We are good on the website. Awesome.
It doesn't matter if we're good or not. Just be happy about it.
Well, I've been directing everybody to the website all day thinking that it would be good to go, but it wasn't. All right. So, toxic positivity. I am very excited to talk about this because I, other than you and Alex had referred to me on one of our last couple records as a optimist, I think most people consider me a pessimist. And when you are considered a pessimist, often the response I have, and I've heard other pessimists say this, is to an optimist, a pessimist or a realist seems like a pessimist. And so the idea of toxic positivity, I don't think all positivity is toxic. I don't think that most is, but I think a lot more than people realize is. And so I wanted to talk about this, and I, through work and other means, have been spending a lot of time on what I consider to be maybe the most, the internet's hub of toxic positivity. Any guesses as to what I'm about to say? LinkedIn. Yeah. I think LinkedIn is the hub of toxic positivity on the internet. It's also the hub of hustle grind culture positivity, which drives me fucking crazy. So,
yeah, that is one of the places that I see it, that I cringe sometimes when I see things that people say that they think are positive. Then I'm like, that can be interpreted a bad way.
I was actually
by a person in a certain situation, more or less.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Sorry, Sarah's texting me about how many airline miles I have. I don't know why.
Because she wants to know. Duh.
No, but
she can get away, the better. She's looking to flee.
Isn't
that the ultimate insult? Cash in your airline miles to leave you?
That'd she's yeah.
See, and I think that I see it more in replies to posts than I do posts.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good, the hustle culture probably takes over the like rise and grind, and like that stupid, you know, mindset probably takes over a lot of the actual posts themselves. But yeah, I think that like it's weird with the, you know, with so much of the internet being a cesspool of negativity, and a lot of which I think we'll talk about on our next episode with fan culture. But toxic positivity, LinkedIn is just that is.
It's funny, one place that I tend to see it is when someone announces they got a job. Sometimes the way people congratulate them is a way that is over the top of how much they deserved it, which implies that you didn't deserve the last job you didn't get that you tried to get. Like, you weren't good enough for that one. If you got this because you were good, just because you deserve it, you're good enough. It implies everybody else who applied for it wasn't good enough. You know, so it's, and so somebody got promoted within my work circle, my company, my new company. And I'm like, oh, there's 50 comments. Let me check these out. And every single one of them, if they weren't just congrats, were actually worded really well about how lucky we are to have you on this team and what, you know, how great it's going to be to work with you. And like, none of them have a toxic positive spin that's like insulting to the people who didn't get it. I'm upset. I thought out of 50, one of them would be that way.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a controversial take, but I think that when you get around a concentration of smarter people, which I would imagine in your industry, there's a good amount of smart people, that you're not going to have people fall into platitudes. And I think toxic positivity becomes a lot about platitudes. I think it's a lot of non-thinking that creates toxic positivity. People don't want to think about things. And so, or like, they don't want to put thought into things. And so, like, you know, it becomes very much just a, like, you know, like when you say, hi, how you doing? Half of everybody is expecting good. How are you? But nobody is expecting very, or half of everybody is definitely not expecting
what happened to me last week. Sit down, pull up a chair.
Right. They don't want a real answer. And so when you get into that mindset of like, these are just things that we say, like the way you say, God bless you when someone sneezes or whatever, like when it becomes that, which, well, I know you don't, but like for some people, it's a mindless thought, like a mindless rote thing. And toxic positivity, I think, falls into that a lot. And you know, with, you know, God bless you when you sneeze is like, is what I think of that level of so rhetorical.
A set of words I said for the sound, not, it wasn't a real question.
Yep.
Looking for an answer.
Yeah. And I think that like, I have this, okay, there's this thing that is a pet peeve of mine when you're interviewing for a job. And one of the questions that the whole question itself is a pet peeve of mine. If you're an employer and you're asking an interviewee, what is your biggest weakness? Because everybody knows that you're supposed to answer, my biggest weakness is that I care too much or I work too hard or, you know, like, and it's like, we all know that that's the answer that you're supposed to give so that it means nothing.
I always give a two-part honest answer. I have two things on my biggest weaknesses.
All right.
The first one I said, I'm always working on this, but I'm always not rising up as high as I want. I'm not good at constant communication stream. Like, if you ask me something, I want to finish it and tell you it was done. You know, I don't want to stop what I'm doing to inform people that I'm three quarters of the way through doing something. And that leaves unfortunate people's minds not knowing if it's going to be done or not because they're anxious to hear. So that is a weakness of mine that I definitely know I have. I'm also not a numbers guy. I'm a word guy. I work in marketing, but I'm a storyteller. So I really need to partner with someone who's a data analytics numbers person with that strength, because that's not my strength. Like, I partner with someone who has that strength, and together we're stronger. So I'm always honest about that, because they are negative things, but they're things that can be accommodated and should be on a good team.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other one is, have you heard about honesty being the weakest thing? I guess for an interview, and the person says, what's your biggest weakness? I'm totally, completely honest. I am just always 100% honest. Well, I don't see that as a weakness. Well, who the fuck cares what you think?
Yeah, I've seen that meme. I love that. I would love to do that.
George Carlin thing, apply for a job that you wouldn't take in a million years. Everything you want to do in the interview. And then Monday, show up for work.
I will say I've had some interviews. So I've interviewed for what I find out partway through the interview is a pyramid scheme. It's happened several times because they lie and what their job posting is. And so you don't know. And you get down there and you see that there's like nine other people.
Job interview.
Well, sometimes it's a genuine job interview, but they've got nine managers interviewing nine people to try to get them in, and it's, you know, and you can tell pretty quickly because it's, oh, there's nine 22-year-olds with suits on, and all of a sudden they're talking about, you know, it's door, you know, there's like a door-to-door thing. And so like I get into the interview.
Trying to sell the business to you before they even start interviewing. Why are you selling me on the business? But
yeah. The last time I did one of the, I did a phone interview for one of those, and the person, you know, I was, I answered the phone because I was thinking it was something else, and they were like, "Are you looking for a job?" And I was like, "Yeah," and so I started doing the phone interview, and they were like, "Great, well, if you can get on a call, I'd like to set you up with my to interview with my manager tomorrow morning, phone interview, phone screen," and I was like, "Sure." FaceTime or Teams. So I get on and the next morning and I'm like, I'd say 2 minutes early, but I'm trying to get, for whatever reason, it did, like my mic was not on correctly. So I'm like, just give me 1 second. I'm adjusting the, you know, the volume was too loud. I could hear myself or whatever. And then I realized that there's 40 other people on it. So I like sit for the 5 minutes that the presentation is, hang up afterwards. And I get a text that says, "We'll let you know if you get picked for the follow-up screening this afternoon." And I text back, "I'm not interested." as soon as we got on the group chat, when I was told I needed to speak with someone, and I wasn't asked a single word, and I was not told it was a group chat, I was like, "This is a pyramid scheme," and it's just a pyramid scheme in the time of COVID. And I was, so I texted back and was like, "I'm not interested." And then later in the afternoon, I got a text that said, "We've not decided to move on with you." I'm like, "Is it because I said no, or
you were too smart for us?" Yeah, like most scams, we're not looking for the smartest person in the room for the scam because you'll catch on at some point.
Yeah,
that's why so many scam emails are so badly written. If you're someone who could catch that it's badly written, there's no way they can do the whole scam on you. If you fall for the first email, they know you're someone we can scam.
Right. Yeah. But it was, yeah. So like I, with the question about the what's your biggest weakness? I have tried answering it honestly and like with a positive spin, like I've tried to do that. I've like prepped it and I've had like recruiters be like, "You're making it too complicated. Just tell them." And I'm like, "I don't want to do that." I'm like,
my biggest problem is I don't know how to answer this question in an interview, and it always trips me up. I would really appreciate any mentorship you guys could give me right here in the interview. What's a good answer to that question?
My biggest weakness is that I don't know how to answer this question.
Yeah. I don't know how many jobs I have not gotten because I don't know how to answer this question.
I will say that I have my current job. The two women that hired me were amazing. One of them, I've said it to you several times, is the best boss I've ever had. I say it just to rub it in your face. No, you're in there too. They didn't ask me that question. I don't think you asked me that question when you interviewed me.
I don't ask stupid things I don't care about.
Yeah. And so like, I've realized that like the people I like working for don't ask that question because they want to know real shit about you, you know, not like they don't want to see you jump through the hoop. And I think that that is what, to me, a lot of that toxic positivity is the like, here's the social hoop, jump through it. And it's like, I want to be real. I want to be like, real doesn't have to be rude, and rude doesn't have to be pessimistic or gloomy doomy. Like real can just be like, we are human beings. Let's connect as human beings. We do not have to be like, "Hi Matthew, you're looking chipper today." And
you know, it's funny because in one of the places I used to work, we had workshops on subconscious tells and biases.
Yeah.
And one of them was around in interviews that if you, when someone walks in the interview and you're interviewing them, if you say something like, "Oh my God, a T-Rex shirt, my family is so into dinosaurs," I have just put you at ease at a level where the next person who walks in that I don't say that to, that's just wearing a regular shirt, and I just say, "Hey, please take a seat," I have unfairly biased that we had a connection for a second. You're feeling more relaxed than the next person or the previous person who went in the room. And yeah, it's great for you, but it's unfair to them. It's not intentional. But yeah, like by being personal and it's just so that's not in the questionnaire, you can give an unfair advantage to somebody just because, you know, made you feel good. So, oh, well, even the fact that like you walk in and we both have beards and you're like, oh, he's a real man like me. He has a beard. That could give you an unfair advantage to some poor schmo who doesn't know how to grow a beard.
Yeah. I don't think it's about knowing. I think it's just about...
No, it is.
Testosterone. Making sure your T is high enough.
I had a
being an alpha.
A low T. I was at a urology convention once when I worked on a urology drug, and there was a place that did... One of the vendors did testosterone testing, and in the hotel, in there, they had a suite where they would come and do the test. Like, you go take the test, and they mean urologists to do it so they can get them to buy the test later, but it was open to anyone. And you get free breakfast for coming by and letting them do the test. So my team went and got the test taken. And one of the guys on our team scored like significantly below average testosterone. And so we nicknamed him Low T. That was his name. Like for the next 3 years, he was Low T. And he was like, I have a son. I have reproduced. Like, got lucky, Low T.
I don't know if I sent you this on Instagram, but I saw a thing this week that said, next time someone tells you they're an alpha, just be like, oh, is that a furry thing? I don't know much about that. Like, are you a top or a bottom in the furry thing? I don't understand how that works. I haven't heard anybody say they were an alpha in years, but hopefully I never will again. But if I do...
Travel in better circles than you used to. So toxic positivity.
Yeah.
So other things about it besides LinkedIn annoyances. It strikes me sometimes as similar in style, but not in magnitude, of telling a depressed person, just cheer up. You know? Yeah. Like there's a similarity, and actually it could be an example of it. But like if somebody says they lost their job or they're miserable, I'm miserable at my job, someone says. And like, you know what? Just hang in there. It'll get better, man. You know, you can just tough it out. And like, it's encouraging you to stay in a bad situation by trying to make you look at the bright side. When maybe the better thing is, well, let's get your resume punched up and get you out of that job. But the toxic positivity is look on the bright side and there's good stuff about that job. And, you know, it's getting you benefits, which may keep you in that job longer when the person's trying to be nice. But that's not the best thing always.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Going off
ourselves, we try to look on the bright side. I always try to look on the bright side, and that's not always the best thing to do.
I think you and I have talked about this a little bit before, but I think that when you like for example, the everything happens for a reason, which I don't believe, but like
I mean,
people say it.
Action,
I mean,
reaction,
yeah,
physics, chemistry, yeah, something.
Yeah, but like the idea of that people it using all that
the best.
It'll all work out for the best, whatever it is. And, you know, like you're like, oh, you just got diagnosed with whatever.
You have diabetes. You're probably going to lose some weight.
Yeah. But I was going to say, like, everything happens for a reason, or, you know, someone says that. That, I think, is toxic. I do think once you're through that process, and I really think this has to be personal. You can't do this for other people. Like, oh, my girlfriend broke up with me. Oh, everything happens for a reason. Like during the breakup, that's not what you want to hear. But 10 years later, like for example, my ex-girlfriend.
Well, we did a whole episode on finding the good things that come out of a bad thing.
Right.
But that is like an after the fact thing. Saying it was bad and a lot of bad things happened. I wouldn't have chosen the bad thing to happen, but a good thing finally did happen.
Right, right. And maybe that bad thing brought me here to this thing that's better than that was bad. That's a fine way of adding perspective and layering it in your brain. But I do think that's a personal thing. I don't think we should be doing that for other people. Like,
I mean, the thing I don't like about it as a proactive thing and telling someone else is the same as the inane expression that God doesn't give you anything more than you can bear or whatever that is. And I'm like, yeah, tell that to all the people who died from what God gave them. Like that,
yeah. Leukemia.
That's a survival fallacy, there. You know,
children with leukemia, and
people who take their own lives because they can't handle it, or people who get diseases and can't. Like, there's lots of things people can't handle. People's family breaks up because of the pressure they're under. Like, it's like the very much survivor theory, you know, fallacy of I survived stuff I had, therefore. But it's a that's the religious spin on the toxic positivity, because it's like, let's look for the bright side, but it's not always the right time to look for the bright side. The bright side might be the light that takes you into the TV set, Carol Ann. You know, look the right direction.
I just want you to consider one thing, the words of the great philosopher Eric Idle, and have you always looked on the bright side of death?
Do-do.
Even when you take your terminal, draw your terminal breath?
But the great Eric Idle always said, also said, life's a piece of shit when you look at it. So use and trying.
Yep. I love that song. When Logan was little and he would get upset, and like when I was 2, 3, 4 years old and he'd get upset, I'd be like,
let life get you down, Mrs. Brown.
I'd start playing it. And then, and then I'd be like, life's a piece of shit when you look at it. And he'd be like, he swore. Cause at that point he wasn't like, he knew I swore, but he wasn't used to like music swearing that much yet. And so he was like, this is funny. I think I'm going to go out. I'm going to say some shit that's just wild and offensive right now. I think that toxic positivity is a problem of the stupid. I don't think it's just dumb people, obviously, but I think that like the smarter, you know, ignorance is bliss kind of idea. I think in order to just ignore the bad and be like, everything's great while the building's burning behind you, you got to be stupid.
Well, I think that's for self abuse with toxic positivity.
Sure.
But I think it's also a problem that people who don't think about what they're saying shame you, or you know, and yeah, make you feel bad, and or shame the people who are witness to what's being said, like in the case of the LinkedIn saying, you know, of course you got that job, you totally deserved it, no one else is nearly as good as you, and three other people who applied for the job are reading that going, yeah, I guess I'm crap, you know. Yeah. Or the fact someone else who's in a similar job and didn't get a promotion is like, if you're saying it's because they deserve the promotion, that means by extension I don't deserve it. So you can be hurt by that, even if you're not someone who doesn't fall into the trap of doing it to yourself.
Yeah.
And also, like, someone who takes the advice of stay where you are, it'll get better. I remember the day that my wife broke away from toxic positivity. It was yesterday when she left me. She had a job that she hated. But every time her manager, one thing her manager was good at is sensing when she was at her breaking point and changing something slightly to make her think it's going to get better. New job title, slight new project to work on, just something to make her think, oh, it's getting better. But it never did. And
the carrot, it's a carrot.
Yeah. Well, it was a piece of cheese is what it was.
Well, they hang the carrot. That's the carrot on a stick. It's,
yeah. But we were driving. I was driving home from work. We were carpooling together. Yeah. Her company was like down the road from mine. And we at my company were going through a merger and reorg. And they gave us the book Who Moved My Cheese to read. And then we did workshops with it. And it's about how if you get stuck in a rut, like a mouse in a maze and you know where the cheese is, and someone moves the cheese, there's some types of people who go, the cheese used to be here. And they keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting the cheese to come back. And they starve to death waiting for the cheese to come. Oh. And there's some people who go, wait, the cheese is not where it used to be. Let me go out and look and figure out what do I need to do to get the cheese now that it's not here. So, you know, who are basically can adapt to the situation and find out what do I get rewarded for now, because it's not what I used to get rewarded for. Right. And if you can't be, so it was called hem and haw and sniff and scurry were the four different types, but hem and haw for different reasons don't go forward. Sniff and scurry in different ways do go forward and succeed. And my wife was reading it to me, and it's short. It's like a little parable type thing. And then the book is very short. The story is very short, but then the book goes into business terms about it and stuff, and it's a very cool way to look at things and look at changing to succeed. But my wife was reading it to me in the car while I was driving home, and she started to have a panic attack because she realized it was describing the situation she had been in 5 years at her business, where she just kept waiting for the cheese to come back, and she wasn't getting rewarded, but she kept waiting for it. And so it was really funny that the book was for me, because I'm kind of an improviser and I'm adaptable, so yeah. I already was living that life. But she saw herself so strongly in it that she changed. She quit her job like a week later. She got another job like right after. Like she aggressively went looking for a job, got a job, quit. And then did the baller thing of quitting. And her boss said, well, where are you going? And she goes, I don't know. I'll find something. I'm just not staying here. Even though she already had a job lined up. She acted like she did. And then
nice.
Told people in the office, like, 2 weeks later, oh, I think I got an interview, when she was already working at the new job.
I am very susceptible to the carrot side of things. I can really, you can really keep me going by putting something in front of me. And I hate that about myself. But the carrot thing I think is hilarious because I'm in, you know, marketing, and one of the campaigns that my company has done over the last 6 months to a year is they're calling the carrot campaign. I don't think that's customer facing. I think that's just in general what they're calling it behind the scenes. But when it came up and I heard about it, I said, hey, you guys know that like the point of like the carrot on the stick is you never get the fucking carrot. So like, are we not giving? And they're like, no, it's just to motivate people. I'm like, oh, we're not thinking about it. Okay, gotcha.
For the donkey, the stick comes from the saddle to in front of it, and it moves with them.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate moving the goalpost. Yeah, I've heard someone in project management say sometimes you get the carrot, sometimes you get the stick, meaning sometimes you get a reward and sometimes you get punished. And I'm like, no, you don't get the carrot. That's not right. That's not how you use the carrot.
Yeah. No, they don't get it. So, sorry, I've been texting with one of our fans who hopefully is figuring out how to get on to watch. But so, toxic positivity. I don't believe it exists. I meant to say that like rodents of unusual size.
I know you meant to say that. I was like, I don't know how to respond to that in a rodents of unusual size, but like, I don't know how to make one attack you.
Yeah. Toxic positivity. It's just a guy in a suit. I really feel like I am.
Yeah. So those of you who are listening and saying, you know what, I wonder if I've accidentally said things that were like toxic positivity to someone, like just telling them to stay positive or just stick in there, stuff like that. And I was, or happiness is a choice, my favorite one. And now I say, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. What are my alternatives to do so I don't accidentally be toxic positively? So if someone's coming to you with a problem, rather than trying to tell them to look on the bright side of life like Mr. Idol would, be more of a Bill Clinton. I'll feel your pain. It's like that. Like, I'm here for you. I'm listening. Yeah, so, you know, so just be there for a person without trying to tell them it's going to get better, because they're smart. They know if it's going to get better or not. They don't need to be told that. They just need to know that there's someone there to talk to, someone there to fans, you know, someone there. You don't have to look for a solution. It's one of the things like when someone dies, you know, sometimes people die. And I'm like on the YouTubes, I mean on the YouTubes, on the Facebooks or on the Twitters, and people say things like inane about, well, they're in a better place, and like people who don't believe in that are like, that does not help me, you know. And there's like, you know, and that.
To be fair, I think 6 feet under the ground sounds like a better place too.
It depends on the situation. Yeah. I mean, if someone who is married to the hottest woman on the planet dies, they're not a better place. They were doing good before that, like. But I thought it was really interesting that when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, the Jewish expression of let their memory be a blessing suddenly became prominent, because she was Jewish. People were saying that instead of rest in peace. Like, that got out as, oh, here's the thing Jews say, as if we haven't been saying it forever. But like, that's the good attitude kind of thing.
5,000 years. You guys are older than us, but you are not. But you haven't been around forever.
Is.
Fair point.
That's the relative forever as long as it's been since Adam and Eve. Since, I mean, maybe
it's Adam and Eve, not Adam or Eve.
Well, really, you know, it was Adam and Steve, because Eve was a clone from his rib, and then she had to be trans to become Adam and Eve. If you really,
get technically, yeah,
but so like that, but that's like that attitude of, you know. Is not saying things are going to get better. It's not devaluing someone's pain or anguish.
Right.
It's just looking on a positive element. That's not the bright side of things. It's just,
yeah,
you know, take with you the positive.
I think that sometimes to piggyback off and like slightly derail and slightly piggyback off of what you were saying. I think that toxic positivity also can often overlook the solution, because in order to look for a solution, you have to acknowledge there's a problem.
Right. Yeah. 100%.
And so I think that
wait for your job to get better.
If it's right.
Not, make it better or move on. Don't just wait. Yeah.
Like you have to say, okay, like we're going to deal with this problem, and dealing with a problem is obviously acknowledging the problem. And, you know, I don't know that the five stages of grief are definitely how it goes. I know it's a theory, like it's a, not a theory. I don't want to use that word because that word's so muddied, but,
it's a paradigm that we use.
But like there is an idea, we have an idea of some basic path in which grieving happens, and grieving can happen for a loss of a job or a relationship or, you know, life. And in order to go through those steps, which gets you to the catharsis, to the solution, to acceptance, you have to denial's a part of it, but it's just a part. You can't just be like,
if you get stuck at any stage and don't move through, that's not good.
Getting
stuck there is a bad place to get stuck, because you don't know you're stuck when you're there. The whole point of denial is you don't know that you're stuck there.
Right. And I think I just thought of something I want to say too, which is a side, again, not a side thing, but it's a secondary
different path.
The idea of dealing with something is really important to keep going forward, not just in that moment, but if you deal with something now and you actually problem solving, and whether it's just the process of grieving or accepting or going through the process, even if it's not something that you're actively doing, but you're just allowing emotion and catharsis to work its natural path, you are enabling yourself to do that next time when it's worse, potentially. If you are,
giving yourself permission to feel what you're feeling and to react.
You're going through a tiny little suck moment of like, oh, my girlfriend broke up with me. This isn't as bad as in 30 years from now when I get, when I get bowel cancer.
I mean, I'm saying your girlfriend breaking up with you is not horrible, because Sarah was getting sick of her.
Sarah is the reason we had her. Sarah was like, she's cute. No. Sarah will be like, are you fucking kidding me? Matthew can make those jokes. You can't. So the other thing I wanted to bring up with the not addressing the issue and toxic positivity is that we can also create some really bad mental habits. I think that this one actually will overlap with toxic masculinity to some extent, or maybe incel masculinity. I was a loser as a kid, right? I think we can all agree. And I loved girls from a very young age. I wanted a girlfriend in kindergarten all the way up until I got a girlfriend. And then I continued to want girlfriends.
I got in trouble for chasing girls in the playground in first grade. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure what you did when you caught them, but I
chased them. I wasn't popular with girls until early 20s. But I wanted a girlfriend for a long time. So in middle school, I would ask out a girl, and I'd get I'd have a little crush, and I would be like, do you want to go to the movies, or do you want to do whatever? And they'd say no, and I would get hurt. And one of the things that you get when you're a boy, at least, maybe this is different for girls, maybe it's the same for girls, is, oh, it's their loss. Which is, I do think, is a part of this toxic positivity of, like, instead of just being like, hey, you're not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but you're still a good person. That's positive, but it's not like, hey, this is, she made a mistake.
Yeah.
And it by not picking you. And so, like, when you say that to a kid enough, I mean, I think we get it. I think that's a large part of what incel culture is built off of, is guys being told too many times, oh, it was her loss. And, I do think everyone is deserving of love, but that doesn't mean that everyone is deserving of love from whoever they want and whoever they choose at any moment.
And people are making themselves the best self they can be.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you showered once a week, that would help.
I shower at least once a week. I'm actually not a good example of this, because I shower sometimes. If it's real bad, I shower twice a day. So
I was talking about soap and water.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying, and on the professional side, you know, I said a couple times my new job. I started a new job since the last time we recorded, and the reason I went looking was there was a change in management in my company at a high level. It didn't really affect me, except that person had just come from a position where they totally restructured the company and tons of people lost jobs. And it is clear to everyone that's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two things you can do in that when you know that's the future of the company. You could assume, well, I'm great and I'm valuable. And so it's not going to affect me because nobody would be crazy enough to get rid of me. Or you can say, you know, I should take this into my own hands and see if I can start looking for another job to make my choice where I go, not wait until I lose a job and have to take whatever's offered to me.
Right.
To me, those are the main choices. You know, you could try to make yourself look great at work and do the best you can, but sometimes it don't make a difference. My wife was in a company that reorged where they were in the middle of making a senior level position for her to be a supervisor over everyone doing her job. But when they reorged, they looked at the org chart and said, this column is just cut. Anyone in that column. Didn't make a difference if they were the best or worst people in the group. They just said that job is now going to be redistributed. Mm-hmm. And in my company where I was working, I was in a global organization where there were 35 people in my department, five of them in Durham, one of them in California. And how easy would it be for them to say, you know what, let's just cut the six people in the U.S. and reuse that headcount here in France where the home office is and the rest of the department, the other 30 people are, let's use it there. So I decided to look for a job, and it took me a day to find a job to apply for. And 2 weeks from that day, I had accepted it already. So that was crazy fast. I got lucky. But the thing is, the real point is, if I had been putting myself off with it'll get better, it'll be fine, and waited till later to do it, this job would not have been open. It just happened to be there with perfect timing. They were looking for two people in this role. And two of us, they posted positions on a Monday. Two of us who applied that week started together on two different brands, the same role. And every day that you don't do something different, it's a day that you're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes doing the same thing's good. If it's working for you and there's
that's what you just need to be aware of what the situation is. If it's not good, I mean, obviously don't quit your job every week. That's not the point. But if you know that things are not, if you're not happy or you're not going to be happy, don't fool yourself to thinking it'll just get better by itself. I'll just wait it out. That's why I was waiting at work. So I was at my first real big company for 20 years. And there were times I had really crappy managers and really crappy departments. And I kind of waited it out and eventually moved. So it does happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, relying on it is not the best path.
Well, and you know, too, like if your industry, every December sucks because we have this crunch time thing, but it's just December. Well, wait till February and reevaluate.
Yeah, the question is what's making it suck? Is it workload or is it the person I work for? My manager changed and now, or like in my case, nothing sucked about the job I just left, except that I had a strong feeling it was not it didn't have a lot of job security.
Yeah. Yep. So I agree.
The great gorilla in the movie Kill and Kill Again. Nobody gets that reference except me. I don't care.
Isn't that from Big Bang Theory?
I don't know what that is.
Wasn't she in a gorilla movie in the show?
Gorilla was an ex-wrestler turned construction, turned secret agent, turned construction worker, turned back to secret agenting. I like this job. It's got, what's the word? Security? Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, but I never thought I'd hear you say it. I didn't. You did. Great scene. I have the whole movie memorized. It's one of the best movies ever made. You are a film buff. You should know Kill and Kill Again. One of the greatest films ever made. It was probably made before you were born, but one of the greatest films ever made. A lot of those greatest films are made before you were born. Citizen Kane, Gone with the Wind, Kill and Kill Again.
All, you know, a lot of Stanley Kubrick's collection.
Yeah, that would be cool. You should watch all those. And also, Kill and Kill Again, here's what's great about it. It's a sequel to the movie Kill or Be Killed. It's a sequel in that the main character has the same actor, same name. And actors who were in the first movie or in the second movie, but in completely different and unrelated roles. Like guys who are bad guys in the first movie are his team in the second movie. It's just like, hey, let's make another movie. And they made it a sequel for some reason.
1981.
Yes, indeed.
And I was not made in 1981.
It was on. So when I was an adolescent, there was HBO. We didn't have it as cable. We had it over the air. You had to buy a box and he scrambled from over the air. But there was a competitor in the Northeast called Wometco Home Theater, or eventually WHT. It was a competitor to HBO that didn't last very long. And that movie was on both those channels at the same time when I was home 2 days with the flu. And like literally it would end on one channel and like a half an hour later it'd be starting on the other, and I would just go back and forth because I had both. So in one weekend, one 2 day period of being sick, I memorized the entire movie line for line. And over the next week or so, piece by piece during breaks at school, like lunch or gym or whatever, I acted it out line for line for one of my best friends, Howard. And it became like the movie we quoted forever after that. We still quote it. Obviously, because I just quoted on the pod.
Yep. So, we've talked about toxic positivity.
Yeah.
Do we have a moment to talk about positive toxicity?
We do. So that's what the person on the call, I was on a virtual hangout with someone, and they said positive toxicity, and then they were all upset at themselves because they meant toxic positivity. But when I looked it up on Wikipedia, it's said both ways. Like both ways are synonyms for each other. So it's not wrong to say it either way.
See, I would have thought positive toxicity, I guess that makes sense. I was thinking about, like, so I have a friend. I know, it's hard to believe. She and I are largely friends through suicide jokes. And make us laugh. We say dark as fuck shit to each other, but we are both positive about it. And other people that don't know the situation are like, what the fuck? And but the two of us are like, you know, like you said, hang in there, like those hang in there posters before. If we were to say that to each other, it would have someone hanging from a noose. Suicide style, not lynching style. That's not funny.
Have to do it yourself. Be a self-lynch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a good buddy who used to do comedy with me. And he also does children's music, and not just writing and performing, but like going to daycares and doing like, it's music time with Uncle John. And his name is Uncle John. And he's great. And he's brilliant. He joined my improv group to be our musician, but then took our workshops until he was so good that we had to put him in the group, like totally, and just became a member of the group, not just a musician. He's a great performer. He worked at Disney for a while until the pandemic made them fire tons of people. And he and his wife bought an RV, sold their house, bought an RV, and went on the road. Going from town to town, making music, telling stories, helping people when they need help. But when I got business trips to Orlando and he was working at Disney and working at preschools, we would go out the first night of there. We'd meet at the Irish bar in Disney Springs. And he'd be like, I have so many jokes I have to tell you because my wife doesn't want to hear them and I can't say them to anyone else. And we're sitting there on Disney property telling Holocaust jokes and just like jokes on every topic that you shouldn't tell jokes just because I can laugh at them with him and nobody else that he knows can. Like because when we were in comedy rehearsal backstage, we could do whatever we wanted. And we all knew this is safe joke area because we're all in on it together. But then it's like, oh, we're teaching a class. We can't do this in front of the students. We can't, even adult students, just not part of our warped comedy world.
Yeah.
But yeah. But he would wait for me to visit so that he could, like, and he does. He comes to this, he has a daughter who lives not like an hour away. So when he and his wife come to this area, they come out here to see old friends. And he's like, we have to get together, just you and me. I need to tell you jokes.
Speaking of Disney Springs, have you been to the Japanese restaurant at Disney Springs?
No.
And the first time I walked into it, I was like, oh, I'm in the Battle of the Crazy 88 in Kill Bill. This is what this room looks like. And there's it's two floors to the restaurant. And I want so bad to go to the bottom of the stairs and just yell, oh, Ren Ishii! and then have like people just come out.
A girl in a schoolgirl outfit with a spiked ball come down the stairs.
That is always my fantasy. No.
He's got spiked balls.
Me too. Spikes are just going on the other direction. Okay. Let's do you have any last thoughts before we do the spiel?
No, I have no pre-spiel thoughts.
Okay. Me neither.
But if I were spieling, I'd say, hey, those of you watching us live, please join us for future live streams. After he goes pick us up his wife at the Greenway, we're going to do a second episode because I'm out of town next week. I'm going to Niagara Falls to see the eclipse. So that will have happened by the time you hear this, so too late for you to do it. So typically we do 6:30, but sometimes, like this one, we're doing a 7:30 one too. 7:45, because he needs time. Watch, we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on our website. What's that?
Talkingaboutthebigstuff.com.
So watch those locations for announcements of changes to the time, because they're not always 6:30. Sometimes they're 7:45.
And you can watch the YouTube stream directly from that in case you don't want to try to go to YouTube. If you just go to talkingaboutthebigstuff.com, there's a live stream button. Click that, and then you will see, you scroll down for a moment, and you'll see this live stream ready to hit play when we're live streaming. When we're not live streaming, you'll see an old one or whatever.
But what you do want to do is go to the YouTube, though. You want to go there because you want to like the video. You want to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Even if you never go back again, subscribe once. Ring the bell. Even if you don't like ringing bells, ring the bell. It sounds pretty when you ring it. And make comments in our videos for when you think, oh, and they're talking about this. I think that reminds me of this topic. Tell us the topic. Maybe we'll do it. You don't know. We might.
We would love to get some suggestions. If you want to be a guest, we're going to vet some guests. We're not just taking anybody who volunteers to guest.
Guest vetting.
But if you talk to us and we know you at all, there's a decent chance you're going to get on as a guest. We would love to have guests.
I mean, even if we don't know you, we'll just kick you off 5 minutes in if you suck.
Yeah. And if you have a topic idea, we have a list of topics, but we would love to give you what you want, because we're all about fan service. And guess what, folks?
Okay. I'm married, so he's speaking for himself. I don't know what kind of stuff he's talking about.
All right. So that's why we want you to like and subscribe, the YouTube, comment, and stuff like that. If you are listening to this podcast on any of the podcast players that exist in the world, there's something. There's a like or a thumbs up or whatever it is. Do that. If
you're on Apple, then give us 5-star review, because we deserve 5 stars.
Yeah. Or give us a 1-star review, but make it really awesomely funny or something. I don't care.
Well, that hurts the algorithm.
Does it hurt the algorithm? Well, yeah, don't do that. 5 is a good thing. Give us, you can write it. Okay. 5. Write a shitty review with a 5-star, Okay. And then if you, want to support us in a monetary fashion, you can do that by going to patreon.com/talkingaboutthebigstuff, where for $1 you'll get the show 4 days early. For $3 you'll get the show 4 days early with bonus content, and for $10 you'll get just the icing on the cake, the chef's kiss of. And if you are on Apple Podcasts and you just want to get the show a few days early and get support us monetarily, there's a subscribe button, which is $1 a month, which breaks down to 25 cents a show or less, depending on how many weeks there are in a month. And you can do that, and that would be great. And you'll get the show 4 days early. It's the same as the $1 Patreon, but it's on Apple. Apple only gives us the option to do one, so we just did the early show to make it easier. But last thoughts, Matthew?
Thanks for hanging in here. Listen to us talk about the big stuff, and keep listening. It'll get better, I promise.
The preceding podcast has been a Chocolate Diamond Media LLC production. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved.